Technology is so wonderful. Just hold on a second. Okay, I've put on the board a title for the day. I don't propose to do this every week, but I thought I would this week. Chickens, it's actually eggs, Goldilocks, and Narrow Ways. And my request of you is that before the hour is over, if I've not talked about the eggs, make sure I do. Because we're going to talk about Goldilocks for a little while first. What's your favorite nursery rhyme? Or your favorite nursery story? Mine's Goldilocks. I don't know how many of you share that. Yeah.
Mine's probably one that nobody's heard of. Once a trap is baited with a piece of cheese, Pickles told little mouse, almost made him sneeze. Grandpa said, "They're in danger, be careful where you go." Paxton said the other, "I don't think you know." So he crept it boldly. Nobody in sight. First he took a nibble, and then he took a bite. Snapped the trap together just as quick as a wink, kissing Mousy fast there because he didn't think.
I deserve that.
You answered
one question. My mother has one about Miss Pullet, but I don't remember it well enough to try to quote it. Let me tell you what I like about Goldilocks. I find that that particular story, almost every student I have understands. And it's amazing how much chemistry you can teach with that. And what I want to do this morning is to try to convince you that there's some things about our Christian walk that follow also in the same kind of way. Let me explain what I mean by that. It's unlikely that very many of you would know what oxidation and reduction are, but it turns out those are processes that sort of control how chemicals interact with one another. Water is a very common solvent, and it turns out there's all kinds of oxidizing agents you can throw in water, and they will oxidize other things, but if you throw certain oxidizing agents into water, they oxidize water. There's all kinds of reducing agents you can throw into water, and they'll reduce all kinds of things, but there's certain reducing agents, if you throw them in water, they'll reduce water. And so a whole lot of oxidation-reduction chemistry that's interesting takes place between the oxidizing agents that can oxidize water and the reducing agents that can reduce water. There's lots of interesting stuff in between those two. Let me show you how this works. The story of Goldilocks, right? The three bears, Goldilocks is coming, but they don't know it yet. They're sitting at breakfast. There's bowls in front of them. What's in the bowls? Very good. You've heard the same story I have. Right? And the father bear says, "Mine's too hot." Mother bear says, "Mine's too cold." Baby bear says, and it doesn't matter because the fact that the others don't suit is enough to sort of control the story. But I want you to see that part. Too hot, too cold, just right. What about the beds? That's right. What about the chairs? Yeah, I didn't remember that one either. It's either the same thing or too large, too small, but that doesn't seem to fit the two adults very well, does it?
I think
in any event,
the bed, that was similar.
I don't know. I think it was soft and hard for the beds, but this idea that except that I studied before I came in. But this idea that there's something over here that carries you too far this way, something over here carries you too far this way, and there's a sort of a happy ground in between. That's something that pervades chemistry anyway. You take a look at electrons on atoms, and it turns out that with hydrogen you have one, you get up to uranium and you've got 92, but you don't have to worry about all 92. Because it turns out the things that hold those electrons, orbitals we call them, some hold them so tightly you can't do anything with them. Some hold them so loosely that you never get any in there. And in between is this little region, some orbitals that hold them just right. And all the chemistry takes place in there. You just know what those are, you're ready to go. Acid-base chemistry. Acid-base chemistry means in this case adding protons and taking protons away, whatever the heck those are. It turns out there's some things that can put protons on water. There's some things that can take protons away from water. And all the acid-base chemistry that's interesting takes place in between the strength of those things. And so lots of chemistry can be taught by this. Now, with that in mind, I want you to take a look at Matthew 7. You're going to hear some echoes, unintended, but God's coincidences still keep going. You're going to hear some echoes of some things that Travis Collins talked about in his sermon this morning. It's not likely you'll hear the 8 o'clock service again, but the service that you go to, you'll probably hear that. But if you'll go to Matthew chapter 7, and I'm looking at verse 13. In my translation, it talks about a narrow gate. It says, enter by the narrow gate. What does yours use the word narrow? Yours says the small gate. And mine says, since the road that leads to destruction is wide and spacious, and many take it, but it is a narrow gate and a hard road that leads to life, and only a few find it. Now, the words that mine has are narrow and hard. Yours talks about small and narrow. Somebody else had another word. Straight. If you have people who talk about walking the straight and narrow, it's probably an echo of this. Okay? It's probably an echo of this. Paths of that sort could be one of two types. Up in the Smokies, there's a hike that years ago Barbara and I took. We took it, to my recollection, once. I've taken it a number of times before then, but I think this is the last time either of us have taken this. And it's a trail that takes you about 7.5 miles up to the top of the biggest mountain inside of the national park. And there's a spot or two along that trail where the trail is maybe 2 feet wide. And you have a cliff wall on one side, you have a drop off beyond that. And you know, they're usually kind, and they've put something for you to hold on to, a little wire that you can hold on to as you go around this thing. That's one way that you could have a narrow one. Second way to have this would be a bridge of some kind over a chasm where you could fall off this way, fall off that way. Goldilocks looks more at that second picture. Okay? It looks more at that second picture in its ideas anyway. Take a look at 2 Timothy chapter 2. And once you get there, mark that place, because we're going to stay there a little while. 2 Timothy chapter 2. I'm going to read this out of my translation. You follow along in yours, and there'll come a point where I'll invite you to tell me the word that your translation uses for this. 2 Timothy chapter 2, I'm looking at verse 15. Just for fun, let's read verse 14 and 15. Remind them of this. Remember that Timothy was a young pastor. Paul is writing him some words of advice. Remind them of this, the people in your congregation, and tell them in the name of God that there must be no wrangling about words. All this ever achieves is the destruction of those who are listening. Make every effort to present yourself before God as a proven worker who has no need to be ashamed, but who keeps the message of truth, here's my translation, on a straight path. What does yours say at that point? Your simply says correctly handles and doesn't talk about paths. I like this way of saying it. Keeps truth on a straight path. Because I think it's an echo of some of the same thing. Now, I want to take you to three other places, but I want you to hold your place in 2 Timothy, because we're going to come back to this in just a moment. If you take a look at Proverbs chapter 4, verse 27. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 27. Might read that in your translation.
Do not swerve to the right or the left. Keep your foot from evil.
Isn't that interesting? Don't turn this way, don't turn this way. There's a path straight path in between. Joshua chapter 1, that's way back in the first half of the Bible. It's right after the first five books. Chapter 1 of Joshua. Chapter 1 of Joshua, verse 7. Somebody read that out of your translation.
Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go.
Now back up one book to Deuteronomy, chapter 5. Verse, I hope it's verse, well, I've got funny verse numbers here, so it may be the wrong one. I think it's verse 32, but in yours it may be verse 29. Do you have a verse 32 in chapter 5? Do you have a verse 32 and a verse 33 and then the chapter ends? Good, okay, that's right. Somebody read those two verses.
So be careful to do what the Lord your God has commanded you. Do not turn aside to the right or to the left. And walk in all the way that the Lord your God has commanded you, that you may live and prosper and prolong your days in the land that you will possess.
Follow the whole way. Don't turn to the left. Don't turn to the right. Follow the whole way. Now, I want to go back now to 2 Timothy and begin an exploration of something. Remember that our work has been in the spirit of lists, right? And I've got a couple of them for you this morning, although the lists themselves are not quite as important as some of the conclusions that we will reach from this. I want you to take a look at the very next verse after the one we read. We read 2 Timothy 2, 14 and 15. What's the first few words of verse 16? Yours says avoid. Mine says have nothing to do with. Anybody have anything else?
Shun.
Yours says shun. Okay. I want you to look at verse 22. First couple of words.
Flee.
Mine says turn away from. Others?
Run.
Run. Run. Okay. I want you to take a look at verse 23. First word or two. Yours just says don't.
Okay.
Don't have anything to do with. Mine says avoid at that point, so it looks like they're sort of reversing the language from these things. And now, chapter 3, verse 5, and it's not the first of verse 5, it's the last little phrase, and I'm looking for the words that start that. Have nothing to do with. Mine says keep away from. All right? So there's your list. In my translation, have nothing to do with, turn away from, avoid, and keep away from. So let's see what the things are that we're supposed to turn away from, have nothing to do with, avoid, and avoid. What's the first one? Chapter 2, 2 Timothy, chapter 2, verse 16.
Godless.
Empty chatter, here says. Godless chatter. Mine says, godless philosophical discussions.
Must have been written by chemist.
Must have been. Or four. Or 4-1.
Vain babbling.
Okay. Do you remember what I read to you in verse 14? Have you remembered that? No wrangling about words. All this ever does, all this ever achieves is the destruction of those who are listening. Okay. Have nothing to do with godless philosophical discussions. They only lead further and further away from true religion. Talk of this kind spreads corruption like gangrene. Keep your eye on that. keep your eye on that. If we do things the way I hope we do things, we will come back to that thought. As in the case of Hymenaeus and Philetus, the men who have gone astray from the truth, claiming that the resurrection has already taken place, they are upsetting some people's faith. Some things had been happening. He's pointing out those, and he's saying there's something fundamentally unhealthy here where faith is concerned. Stay away from godless chatter. Is that what yours said?
Mm-hmm.
And yours said what, John?
Mine said empty.
Empty chatter. Godless philosophical discussion. Okay. Now, turn to the second one. This is verse 22. My translation, verse 22. Turn away from
evil desires.
Turn away from avoid. Have nothing to do with. Shun, and there are, I think, a couple more words.
Flee.
Run from. Okay. So one is godless chatter. What's number two?
Evil desires. Aha. Aha. There's a little of clause in there. No, that's right, it's in mine too. Mine says, turn away from the passions of youth. Youthful lusts. Luckily, this room only feels has a problem. What's he talking about? What's he talking about?
That's what was on.
Maybe. Paul said at one point in another letter, when I was a child, I spoke as a child, I thought as a child, I understood as a child, but when I became a man, I put away childish things. Could he be talking about that? Maybe. Maybe.
So many of the prisoners in their testimony write, you know, about they start in church and everything goes fine until they get to about the mid-teens, and then they decide, like the prodigal son, they can do it better on their own. And that winds up putting them in prison.
I had not thought to lay that off here, but it's horribly appropriate, isn't it?
I don't know if this fits, but so many of my students think they're invincible.
Oh, yeah.
In many ways. I mean, you just nothing gets through to them until they graduate, and 3 years later they come back and talk to me and they say, oh, you know, you teach us something that we should have listened to. But they just don't hear it. So that I think that invincibility is.
Somebody said one time that college is wasted on young people. Somebody else said that college students are the only consumers in the United States who are delighted when they get less than they pay for. I think that one, sir. I think if you put the prodigal son on this, I had not thought to do that. That might be the best thing to help you get an eye on that. What's important is today, not tomorrow. What's important is today, not forever. And you make all your decisions based on short-term rather than long-term. One of the things I try to do with the students that I have a chance to work with closely is to get them thinking long-term. If I can get them thinking 2 years, 3 years out, most of them realize pretty quickly even that's not far enough. You walk into a class, and instead of worrying about what I have to learn this week, you start to think about what do I have to know 5 years ago that this class, 5 years from now, that this class is going to help me know. And all of a sudden, your attitude changes completely. You got a very different student in your classroom. What are you supposed to turn to then? If you're turning away from this, what are you turning to? Mine uses the word concentrate on. What does yours say? Pursue. pursue
righteousness.
Okay. This one gives a contrast. Concentrate out. Pursue. And what does it say?
Mine says uprightness.
Righteousness is a big word. Uprightness is almost as big, but I think it has just enough of a ring of unfamiliarity that you'll have to think about things a little further when you hear it. Uprightness. What else?
Faith, love,
peace. Faith, love, and
peace.
Yeah, it's not faith, hope, and love. It's faith, love, and peace. You want to tell a story about peace, or do you want me to?
Our grandson is having the most wonderful experience in this church. Some of you know Don Large. Mr. Don comes into their Sunday school class every Sunday morning that he's in town. He brings his guitar, and he's teaching these kids how to sing songs, hymns. And our grandson has sung for us one of the hymns he's learning. Now, when I learned it as, there'll be peace like a river, there'll be peace like a river, there'll be peace like the river in my heart. I think something like that's the way it goes. That's not what he heard. There'll be bees by the river. And when you suggest an alternate wording, it's rejected out of hand because he's learning. But he's learning something about this now. I don't think my grandson understands peace yet. I don't think he understands that concept. Bees makes a lot more sense than bees. Okay. Now, keep an eye on the next little phrase. Concentrate on uprightness, faith, love, and peace. And then mine has a comma, and it says something very important. What does it say? Along with. Mine says in union with all those who call on the Lord with a pure heart. Blessed are the pure in heart. For they shall see God. They shall see God. In union with those who call on the Lord.
In union, along with. With a pure heart. Those who call on the Lord with a pure heart.
Now, if you spot that, if you've got that down, then look at the next one. Avoid what?
What's the third one?
Foolish and useless. Foolish and useless. Mine says foolish and undisciplined, but I like yours better.
Mine says foolish and ignorant.
Ignorant. Stupid and unlearned what? Disputes. Mine says speculation.
Arguments.
Avoid. Foolish, was that the first good word? Foolish.
Useless.
And so forth. Arguments. Speculations. I sort of like arguments a little bit better.
Why? Why are we to avoid them? Because it leads to
quarrels and divisions. Would you please go back and look at the tail end of number two? Concentrate instead on faith, love, peace, in union with. In union with. Okay. I think you just turned on, Treadway.
We talked about this. He told me to tell him if he turned on.
Look at the difference. Divisions and quarrels as opposed to union and unity, right?
divisions and quarrels instead of unions and unity. A servant of the Lord, verse 24 says, a servant of the Lord, verse 24, must not engage in quarrels, but instead must be
no quarrels for us, but instead
what? See if you can set those down for a second.
Just set them right there.
Sorry. No quarrels for us. Instead, what? I want you to watch real carefully because we're coming to the heart of what I'm going to try to explain to you that I see up here. What does it say?
It must be kind to everyone.
Must be kind to everyone.
Kind to everyone.
What else? There's three things here. Mine says a good teacher.
So we're going to make this plural. Remember, he was talking to Timothy, so he went singular at this point. I want this to talk to us, so we're going to go plural. Good teachers.
Not resentful.
Not resentful. I got a better word, but not bad.
Gifted
with patience. Mine just says patient. I like that.
Gifted. Does it take
a gift to be patient with some of your students? Checking to see if the reaction is the same as I think. Allison, you want this?
You don't want my answer.
I think I know it. Okay.
Yeah,
now, look at the front end of verse 25. And in this one, let me just read this and you follow along in yours. Watch the power with which this is worded. Remember now, he's gone singular because he's talking specifically to Timothy. This is a letter to an individual. He that is a servant of the Lord, this is an echo from verse 24, he must be gentle when he corrects people who oppose him in the hope that God may give them a change of mind so that they recognize the truth and come to their senses. Where have you heard that phrase before? And come to their senses, escaping the trap of the devil who made them his captives and subjected them to his will.
Gentle correction. All of this in hope of a godly change in the lives of other people.
Okay? In the hope that God will give them a change of mind so that they can recognize the truth and come to their senses and escape Satan's trap. That's a pretty powerful list. Chapter 3, verse 1. You may be quite sure that in the last days there will come difficult times. People will be self-centered and avaricious, boastful, arrogant, and rude, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, irreligious, heartless, intractable. They will be slanderers, profligates, savages, and enemies of everything that is good. They will be treacherous and reckless and demented by pride, preferring their own pleasure to God. They will keep the outward appearance of religion, but they will have rejected the inner power of it. And what's the admonitions? Have nothing to do with, keep away from, avoid people like that. Now, what's Paul saying? It sounds like you've got a choice. And the choice is you can embrace the world or you can just avoid it. Step away from it. Separate from it. That's a false choice. Because there's a little Goldilocks hiding in here. The choice is not
between embrace the world and reject the world. Although it sure sounds like that in a couple of cases. There's a middle ground in the middle of this.
And we know the middle ground is there because of two things. One that you've already read. Avoid foolish and undisciplined speculations, arguments, understanding. They only give rise to quarrels. A servant of the Lord must not engage in quarrels, but must instead be kind to everyone. A good teacher, patient, gentle when he corrects those who oppose him. That doesn't sound like rejection, avoiding, and separating. What it sounds like is engaging, but engaging in a different way. You hear it? Engaging in a little bit different way. Now let me try to come to the end of this and show you. Chapter 4. I'm still in 2 Timothy. Are you still there? The choice is not between embrace and reject. The choice is
between embrace, reject, and carefully engage using God's principles. And that's that middle ground.
It's hard to find. It's hard to find. But listen to what he says. Now, remember, this charge is for Timothy, but I think it's for us too. Before God and before Jesus Christ, who is to be judge of the living and the dead, I charge you, in the name of his appearing and his kingdom, proclaim the message, and welcome or unwelcome, insist on it. Refute falsehood, correct error, and give encouragement. But do it all with patience and with care to instruct. Do it all with patience and with care to instruct. Skip over to verse 5. It says a few things about what's going to happen when you try to do that. It won't always work. Verse 5, I'm still in chapter 4. But you must keep steady all the time. Put up with suffering. Do the work of preaching the gospel. Fulfill the service asked of you.
So here's what Paul says. Proclaim the message.
I'm going back to verse, the tail end of verse 1. Maybe it's the start of verse 2. I guess it's the start of verse 2. Proclaim the message. Welcome or unwelcome, insist on it. The next one says refute
falsehood. How does yours render that? You have different words there? Yours says rebuke.
Encourage.
Yes, but I want to know both words, if there's more than one word.
Correct.
Yeah, but I need all the words. Proclaim the message, welcome or unwelcome, insist on it. Now the next sentence.
Correct. Heard with great patience and
care. So yours doesn't have any other words in there except... My goodness. Because there's a distinction in there that Paul is trying to make and you need to hear it. I'm going to take you another place where he makes the same thing. Mine says refute falsehood
and correct error. What's the difference between those two words? Refute says everything is wrong. Correct says You got right and wrong all mixed up. And I said, you know, let's encourage, let's make concrete the part that's right, and then let's do a little fixing on the part that's wrong. That is, this one's a little further away, this one's a little closer. And then the last one says, give encouragement. Did you notice how that phrase starts to look a whole lot like this one? Gentle correction way back there. Can you see that?
Mm-hmm.
If you think God has given you a little bit of insight into how things actually are, and you've got a chance to help somebody else do that too, how are you going to do it? Is there a different way than what Paul is talking about here? Doing this in an encouraging way. Doing that in a gentle way. Is there a different way? Can you do correction in a harsh way? That's what Travis Collins was talking about this morning. That's what Travis Collins was talking about this morning when he talked about the elder brother. He's talking about there's a way to do this that condemns, and there's a way to do this that affirms. And if you do this in a way that condemns, you're not following God's path. Listen again to what he said. I'm going back to chapter 2, verse 25. He must be gentle when he corrects people who oppose him in the hope that God may give them a change of mind so that they will recognize the truth and come to their senses, escaping the trap of the devil who made them his captives and subjected them to his will. Take a look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. This should be three books earlier. It's 1 and 2 Thessalonians, 1 and 2 Timothy, so it's not very far back. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Now, if you've been here faithfully for a long time, you've heard us talk about this before. Okay? I'm looking at 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Let me start at verse 14. Be at peace among yourselves. We urge you, brothers, my translation, to admonish those who are undisciplined, encourage the apprehensive, support the weak, and be patient with everyone. Admonish some, encourage some, support some, and be patient with all of them. How do you know the difference? Sometimes one looks a whole lot like the other. And you have to pray for wisdom to know. Keep away from people like that, Paul said in 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 5. If you kept away from them, you never would do these things. I don't know for sure, but I think if you could see the Greek in the way Paul said it, I think he's going to be saying, keep them at arm's length. Be careful about letting their attitudes become your attitudes. But I don't think he's saying disengage. I think he's saying instead, not reject, not walk away from, but be real careful how you engage. And the more militant such folks are, probably the more careful you need to be. Yes, sir?
I would kind of take this to mean reject their way of life. Not necessarily reject them. My translation,
I think, put it as keep away from people like that. And I think it means, you know, keep a distance. Be careful about letting their attitudes contaminate yours. Okay? Now, what did I promise we're going to talk about as we finish?
Eggs.
Okay. I want to try to show you how this works out in some kind of weird way. Maybe I'll see the connection and nobody else will, but let's see. If you go to the store in the middle of August and your air conditioning is out when you get home, and you brought home a dozen eggs, and you put them on the kitchen table, what's going to happen to those eggs in fairly short order? They're going to spoil or rot. So if you got politicians coming to town, that might be just what you want. But chances are that's not what you want. What do you do to avoid that? You put them into a refrigerator. We're coming there in just a second. Okay? I'm teaching a unit in my class right now on kinetics. And kinetics talks about the speed of reaction. And the whole purpose of a refrigerator is to slow down the rate of spoilage. Slow down the rate of rotting. And what that means is that if you look at a graph and it says the rate of rotting as a function of temperature, then as temperature goes up, rotting gets faster and faster. I don't know if that's a straight line. I don't know if that's a straight line or not. But what that says is that if you raise the temperature, the rotting is going to be faster. So if you're in a hot
August day with no air conditioning, temperature might get up to 80, might get up to 90, might get up to 100. It's going to rot more quickly, right? Now, on a centigrade scale, you're talking about 35, 38, 40 degrees centigrade. So if you took it to 50 degrees centigrade, or 75 degrees centigrade, or 90 degrees centigrade, it's going to rot way faster, right? So if you put it into boiling water at 100 degrees, it ought to rot just like that. Does it? Lois? What does it do? It does whatever is meant by cooking. Right? What does that mean? It means as temperature rises, a different behavior kicks in. And that behavior is cooking. I don't know if this is a straight line either, but I do know that it crosses. So the cooking is the faster one at these temperatures, and that's what you see. And rotting is the faster one at these temperatures, and that's what you see. So what do you think is the temperature at which it switches over from rotting to
somewhere
between there must be a temperature which it switches over. I got an idea. Let's take a little mass of hay inside of a box. Let's hollow it out a little bit. Let's put the eggs in there. Let's grab a mama chicken by the neck, put her on the eggs. Do they rot? Or do they cook? Like what? There's a third behavior. There's a third behavior.
And that behavior looks like this. I don't know if this is a straight line either.
If it gets too cold, what happens to that poor egg?
It rots.
If it gets too hot, what does that little egg do?
Hatching is a very narrow window. And life is in that window for little chickens and little eggs. My wife teaches kindergarten. Used to be they would sell you these things. I think it's too cruel now they don't anymore. They would have a light bulb. And they have these plastic things with little rings, and you'd set the eggs around, and the eggs that were way out here on the fringe and didn't get enough heat from the light bulb, what would they do?
Rot.
And the ones that were down in close to the light bulb, what would they do? They would cook, just the ones out in here. Now, they didn't intend to have those lessons taught in that setting, but they would teach them. Okay.
Why does a mother get concerned when the baby gets a fever, and the fever goes up to 103 and 104 and 105? That little baby's brain is liable to start cooking. You don't want that to happen. Why do we worry so much when little kids get lost in the wintertime and they're out in the cold and in the snow? If it gets too cold, you get... What's our word for rotting? Of this kind. You catch that word as we went walking by? You catch that word?
2 Timothy chapter 2 verse 16 have nothing to do with godless philosophical discussions, godless chatter. They only lead further and further away from true religion. Talk of this kind spreads corruption like gangrene.
You're moving a body of believers out of that little window. You see?
Now, there's a whole bunch of messages hiding in here. What that says is if you start getting too legalistic and rigid and sanctimonious, you're making a mistake. And God needs to bring you back. And if you start living life as if there is no God and you're going prodigal, God needs to bring you back. And the message of the prodigal son is a Goldilocks story if you can see it. It's a Goldilocks story if you can see it. There's too much this way, and God needs to bring you back. There's too much that way, and God needs to bring you back. And when you come home, let's celebrate. But it also tells us how we ought to interact with each other. There's so many places in Scripture that says, if one of you is taken in a fault, and another one goes to set him right, be careful, lest you get caught in the same thing too. Watch your attitude. You could get caught just as easily as that one. If you think, all your problems are of your own making, you should be ashamed of yourself. Probably you're not going to be much help to anybody. But if your attitude is there, but for the grace of God go I, all of a sudden you might be useful again.
I don't like this list, but I think it takes me over to something pretty important. Watch out.
There's some behaviors, there's some attitudes that, don't keep us in the center of what we need to be in for kingdom work. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we thank you for the time you give us. We thank you for the words that you put in Scripture. And today we pray that you would make these words come alive in our hearts so that we can begin to be of more use to you in the kingdom. Show us the opportunities you bring our way each week. And if it's your will, bring us back together next week. For all these things we ask in your Son's name. Amen. Thank you.